you got to win the midterms. Because if we don't win the midterms, it's just going to be, I mean, they'll find a reason to impeach me.
Find a reason? Choose a reason. Take your pick.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's one reason.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
Notice.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yeah. And there's no place I'd rather be. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK, 90.7 FM in LA, and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the airwaves and the internets around the country and the world. Blanketing planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us. As you can tell, I still have my cold, but working my way through it. On yesterday's Bradcast, we marked the fifth anniversary of Donald Trump's deadly January 6, 2021 insurrection at the U.S. Capitol as part of his effort to steal the 2020 election that he had lost. And today on the Bradcast, we mark the fifth anniversary of the Coffee County, Georgia voting software breach carried out by Team Trump allies the very next day after the insurrection, when they unlawfully gained access to and opened the proprietary touchscreen voting system software at a small rural county election headquarters in Georgia. They opened up the voting system software and the tabulation software in this small county. They made copies of the statewide voting software unlawfully, purportedly looking for evidence of fraud in the 2020 election. Didn't find any. But they did distribute the software across the internet to, frankly, Lord knows who. That matter was initially exposed on this program by longtime election integrity champion Marilyn Marks, who received and recorded a phone call from one of the ringleaders of that scheme at the time. We have since come to learn the scheme was actually hatched in the Oval Office in December of 2020. This show aired some of that audio that was recorded by Marilyn Marks, who helped expose this whole scheme. After she was contacted by Team Trumper Scott Hall down in Atlanta.
You know, I'm the guy that chartered the jet to go down to Coffee County to have them inspect all of those computers. And they scanned all the equipment, imaged all the hard drives.
They imaged the hard drives?
Yes.
How in the world did you get permission to do that?
We basically had the entire elections committee there. Okay. And they said, we give you permission. Go for it.
Yeah, go for it. Despite how unlawful it actually was. Hall and others would eventually plead guilty to their roles in that scheme before the case brought by Fulton County, Georgia District Attorney Fonnie Willis was eventually dismissed last month. And that software, well, it remains in the wild while Georgia voting systems remain vulnerable following that breach, as we will discuss with Marilyn on the show very shortly, as the Trumpers are still claiming that the 2020 election was stolen for Joe Biden in Georgia. And if you hadn't heard over the holidays about this, and Desi Doyen, I don't know if you had heard about this until we started working on the show today, but they are now claiming evidence of some 315,000 fraudulent ballots that were cast in the very Democratic-leaning Fulton County, Atlanta area. Had you heard about that story,
Des? I think you had told me about it, and I would fault no one for missing it because, of course, there's a lot going on, especially there was a lot going on over the holidays.
You hang around with me far too much, apparently.
But, you know, remember, that was all part, that whole voting system breach was all part, and the fake elector scheme were all part of that multi-state, multi-pronged effort to overturn the 2020 election.
Correct, and a lot of people have heard about that, but this new information, this 315,000 1,000 fraudulent ballots they have now discovered
that
were cast in Fulton County, Georgia. Well, that's pretty new information, and you have to kind of be pretty online and, frankly, on the right-wing social media world to have heard about it. But we will, if you haven't heard it, I will detail it shortly with Marilyn. Marilyn Marks, who can tell us if maybe, just maybe, there may be another element or two of that story that is not getting quite the coverage that it should for some reason, as Georgia appears now set to be another critical battleground state in the crucial 2026 midterm elections, featuring, among other important races, what could be the decisive U.S. Senate race to determine the partisan balance in the upper chamber of Congress for the rest of Donald Trump's second term. No pressure, Georgia. We will, as previously suggested, be focusing a lot on this year's November 3rd midterm elections. But first up, before Marilyn gets here, lawless saber rattling and high seas pirateering by the United States of America continues today in the wake of Donald Trump's murderous weekend invasion of Venezuela, in which some 80 people were slaughtered in that country by American forces at Donald Trump's orders. Amid the unlawful abduction of Venezuela's president, Nicolas Maduro, and his wife in the middle of the night, shortly after the turn of the new year. Since then, as you likely know, Trump and his administration, in little more than a naked show of power because he believes he can wield it however he likes, despite U.S. law, international law, and the post-World War II order be damned, he has continued to threaten neighboring nations, including Colombia and Mexico and Cuba, and yes, the NATO-allied Greenland, an autonomous constituent country within the Kingdom of Denmark, also a longtime NATO ally. So, yes, that's right. Trump is now threatening a war with Denmark, largely because he thinks he can and he believes no one can stop him, and he's not necessarily wrong about that for now. In the bargain, he is sending the message that the post-World War II world order is, I guess, over. He's tossing away all of the U.S.'s moral and legal leverage to prevent autocratic nations like Russia from invading sovereign neighbors like Ukraine and other EU countries, or China from taking over Taiwan. After all, what right do we have to tell them that no, they can't do that when we are doing precisely the very same thing in our own backyard? With the Marco Rubio-led U.S. State Department on Tuesday going so far as to post a meme on social media that reads, quote, "This is our hemisphere." Well, of course, what stops Vladimir Putin from posting on social media, "This is our Eastern Europe"? In the meantime, in hopes of pretending the dangerous tinderbox that post-invasion Venezuela has now become is, you know, some sort of successful George W. Bush-like mission accomplished operation that worked out well, Donald Trump is loudly boasting via his failing social media site on Tuesday evening. He wrote, quote, "I am pleased to announce that the interim authorities in Venezuela will be turning over between 30 and 50 million barrels of high-quality sanctioned oil to the United States of America. This oil," he said, "will be sold at its market price, and that money will be controlled by me as President of the United States of America to ensure that it is used to benefit the people of Venezuela and the United States." Thank you for your attention to this matter. Donald J. Trump, President of the United States of America. The announcement was, of course, covered by corporate media on Tuesday and lauded by Trump supporters as evidence of his great victory conquering Venezuela. He won. "We will now receive as our prize between 30 and 50 million barrels of high quality oil as our trophy." Now, setting aside all of the illegality of all of this for the moment and the unconstitutionality of Trump personally receiving and managing what amounts to unconstitutional emoluments from a foreign nation.
A pretty little slush fund.
And the fact that the Congress, not the executive branch, actually controls the purse strings of the United States. No, he does not get to keep that money and control what happens with it. Setting that part of all of this aside, when you hear that boast about this operation from Trump and his supporters about the 30 to 50 million barrels of oil that we will now receive from Venezuela as our grand prize, remember that the U.S. itself produces just under 14 million barrels of oil per day on our own. So this 30 to 50 million barrels of crude that that Donald Trump is holding up as his victory prize, his spoils of war, it actually amounts to, at the high end, what the U.S. already produces on its own, on our own, in about 3.5 days, Des.
Yeah, and the U.S. is already, right now, the world's largest producer of oil.
Correct, and we produce that amount of oil, even if you go to 50 million, the high end of what he's claiming, and there's no reason to believe him on that, but anyway, 50 million, we make that in 3.5 days. That's production. Now, as to consumption, well, we consume in the U.S., we burn about 20 million barrels a day. So in all, this grand number that you've likely heard about over the past 24 hours, oh, we won 30 to 50 million barrels of oil from Venezuela, which Donald Trump will personally control. Well, it means that Trump has won about 2.5 days worth of oil as consumed by the U.S. That is his grand victory. That is what all of this is about for the moment. That's what makes him believe he is the great grand viceroy of our Western Hemisphere. A tiny, pathetic victory, if you can call it that, for a weak and twisted man who has no idea how to run the country or the world, and for which we all have to pay the price at this point, frankly, for generations in a whole bunch of ways. That is, if we manage to avoid a new world war, thanks to his apparent interest in destroying the post-World War II world order, all because he'd rather you didn't notice the Epstein files or the Jack Smith testimony or our faltering economy thanks to his ill-considered tariffs and other economic mismanagement and any other number of failures that continue to wrench this man's job approval ratings down to all-time lows in the toilet as a new midterm election year gets underway. And the American people will finally have something to say about all of this at the ballot box. He knows that, and frankly, he appears to be terrified about it.
But they say that when you win the presidency, you lose the midterm. So you're all brilliant people. Most of you are in this business longer than me. That makes me smarter than you, because look where I am, right? No, it doesn't. But I wish you could explain to me what the hell's going on with the mind of the public, because we have the right policy. They don't. They have horrible policy.
So that is very telling, it seems to me, Desiree. Mm-hmm. The president, Donald Trump, of all people, saying, what the hell's wrong with the American people? For the longest time, many of us have wondered whether he actually believes the stuff that he falsely claims about being the most popular president ever, about being the most beloved, having the best poll numbers of any president. We've all wondered whether his people are just lying to him about the numbers or whether he actually knows that he's lying about those claims when he says he's the most popular president ever, as he claims over and over again. But he didn't on Tuesday in that claim. So now we know. Now we know that he knows he is loathed by the vast majority of the American people. But he believes, I guess, that if he says otherwise, that if he continues to repeat his Jedi mind tricks by repeating the lies over and over again, that somehow it will all become true. Well, guess what? He's not insane. He's just a liar. And he knows it. And now, after that revelation at a congressional Republican retreat on Tuesday, now he knows that we know that he knows it. We know that he's lying. We know that he knows he's lying. And soon, on November 3rd, it will be our chance to say something about it. When the entire U.S. House and about a third of the U.S. Senate, both chambers currently narrowly controlled by the GOP, will be up for re-election, and the first real brakes on this runaway global disaster train known as Donald Trump will begin to be applied to him and his lawless agenda. So, yes, We will be spending a lot of our time this year focusing on that date, November 3rd, and the necessity of protecting our elections and our democracy as we head toward that critical date. He will wreak havoc, and we will cover it as warranted. But while that is the problem, we, the people, remain the solution, and we, the people, will soon have a say in this matter. We already do, in fact, with our voices and our protests. But for the real reversal of power, the one that I think he is most afraid of at the moment, the people of this nation will have to turn out in droves this November, and so I believe we will. After a year of special and off-year elections in 2025, where Democratic candidates wildly outperformed in election after election in state and counties and cities, both red and blue, all year long, there was one last election of note worth mentioning in 2025 that took place while we were off on the holidays. So I want to get to that quickly before Marilyn joins us. Democrats won big in Iowa. Yes, the great red state of Iowa. The New Republic reported on this on New Year's Eve, the day after the December 30th special election in the Hawkeye State, as the state of Iowa will send Renee Hardman to the state Senate with 71.5% of the vote. That, in fact, is 27 points. She actually won by, I think it was 43 points. But that victory was 27 points more than Kamala Harris won in the state in the same state Senate district last year. Now, it was already a Democratic district, and the special election had been called to fill the seat left vacant by a Democrat who died in office. So the victory itself for Democrat was not a surprise, but the margin was. At least for those of us who haven't been noticing, Democrats overperforming in race after race after race all last year. Hardman's win also prevented Republicans from gaining a supermajority in the state Senate chamber in Iowa, and she will become the first Black woman elected to the Iowa State Senate. As the New Republic notes, a Democratic victory that large in a red state mirrors recent historic results elsewhere and may indicate the voters are fatigued or just outright rejecting anything to do with President Donald Trump. Those results include Abigail Spanberger and Mikey Sherrill's huge gubernatorial landslide victories in Virginia and New Jersey last November. But a victory, they note, in a small down-ballot race such as Hardman's shows that disapproval of Trump and his administration may be hitting closer to home as the government fails to end endless wars and make the country more affordable. Those thoughts, by the way, from TNR before Trump started his next war in Venezuela after the turn of the new year, just days after Hardman's win in Iowa. Earlier last year, Democrats also won big in Erie County, Pennsylvania, which narrowly supported Trump in the 2024 election, and they defeated a 36-year Republican incumbent in a Virginia state house district. Democrats in Georgia managed to win two statewide races for public service commissioner. That's their first non-federal statewide wins since 2006 in the Peach State, and even in the deep southern state of Mississippi. Democrats were able to break the supermajority in the state Senate down there by flipping three seats after 13 years, taking away Republicans' ability to override the governor's veto and easily propose constitutional amendments. All of that is to say that these results should have Trump very worried about how negatively Americans are feeling about his second term, even those who voted for him in 2024. If this holds, writes the New Republic, it could be a major issue for the GOP come 2026 midterms. Well, let's hope so, which, of course, is why we will be covering them so closely on this program all year long, I suspect. To that end, and speaking of Georgia, Marilyn Marks joins us next to help make sense of those 315,000 votes in Georgia's very close 2020 presidential election that Trump Republicans of late have been claiming were fraudulently cast, proving that Trump was right about Georgia. Well, don't laugh. Was he? We will find out next on the Bradcast, along with much more for Georgia and elsewhere in 2026. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial. Hey, this is Brad. Here at the Bradcast and bradblog.com, we fight for election integrity all year around, like no other media outlet in the nation. But of course, we need your help to help us remain on your public airwaves and completely independent. Please help us continue that fight over your public airwaves by stopping by bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
You are traveling back to Georgia. Won't you take me with you there?
Sure. I'll take you. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Yep, as the critical midterm election year begins, we are, in fact, going back to Georgia as we begin our 2026 election protection coverage. Why? Well, for a whole bunch of reasons, among them the fact that Georgia remains, I believe, the only state in the nation that requires voters at every polling place across the state to cast their votes on 100% unverifiable touchscreen voting systems even now. It also remains a very closely divided battleground state whose voters may end up deciding whether control of Congress, specifically the U.S. Senate this year, is flipped to the Democratic Party. While many experts believe and history suggests that Democrats are likely to win back control of the U.S. House in November, the U.S. Senate may be a bit more difficult for the Dems to win. As of now, they will have to flip 4 U.S. Senate seats from red to blue in order to do so. And there are a lot of opportunities for those that sort of flips this year, with some very good Senate candidates running for some very vulnerable Republican seats in several states. But even if they manage to flip those 4 Senate seats, they would have to hold on to all of their existing seats, and more blue seats are on the ballot in the Senate races this year than Republican ones. Of those seats that Democrats will need to protect is John Ossoff's Senate seat, Democrat in the great state of Georgia. Of course, Democrats aren't the only ones with eyes on the Peach State this year. Republicans have been eyeing Georgia polls since at least 2020, when Donald Trump pretended that he won the presidential race there, but for the Republican Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger apparently somehow helping to steal the state that year for Joe Biden or something. Yesterday on this program, we marked the 5th anniversary of Donald Trump's attempted violent effort to steal the election with his incitement of an insurrection at the U.S. Capitol in an attempt to stop congressional certification of Joe Biden's victory on January 6, 2021. Today on this program, we mark the 5th anniversary of the unlawful Team Trump MAGA Republican Coffee County breach of Georgia's statewide voting system in that small southeastern rural county that took place the day after the January 6 insurrection, as the Trumpers in Coffee County were given permission by a corrupt local election director to open up and make copies of the voting system and the software that is used across the entire state, supposedly in search of evidence of that fraud. While several of Donald Trump's co-conspirators eventually pleaded guilty for their part in that Coffee County scheme, a scheme originally uncovered by a frequent Bradcast guest who will be joining us again momentarily today, the broad criminal conspiracy case against Donald Trump and 18 co-conspirators in the state of Georgia as he tried to strong-arm the Secretary of State into finding just enough votes to help him win that state, that case, that conspiracy case, was entirely dismissed late last year following the removal of Fulton County District Attorney Fani Willis from the case. thanks to the appearance of impropriety when it was discovered that she was in a romantic relationship with one of the attorneys that she had hired to work on the case. What that has to do with the case, don't ask me for the moment. Never mind for now. The details of that matter, as ridiculous as they actually are, what it means is that nobody has been brought to account for those crimes in Coffee County that resulted in the copying and distribution of incredibly sensitive and vulnerable voting system software that is still used across the entire state today and will, it seems, be used again this November amid this incredibly critical midterm elections. By the way, that same software is also used in about a dozen other states. In the meantime, for the Republicans' part, they are still pretending that the 2020 presidential election was stolen from Donald Trump in Georgia. And shortly before the holidays, just last year, they managed to invent some seemingly new claims about the 2020 election that you may or may not have heard about unless you hang out in the Republican media sphere, where Trump supporters now believe that they have discovered some 315,000 fraudulently cast ballots from Fulton County, that's Atlanta, in the 2020 election in that very Democratic-leaning county. 315,000 in an election that Trump was certified to have lost by a very narrow 12,000 votes across the state of Georgia back in 2020. As the right-wing Federalist Society website reported in mid-December, quote, earlier this month, Fulton County admitted that approximately 315,000 early votes from the 2020 election were illegally certified, but were nonetheless still included in the final results of that election. The admission came during a December 9 hearing, they report, before the Georgia State Election Board, or SEB, stemming from a challenge filed by a local election integrity activist, as the Federalist describes that person. He had filed a challenge with the SEB in March of 2022 and alleged that Fulton County violated Georgia election rules in the handling of advanced voting ahead of the November 2020 election, the early voting, counting hundreds of thousands of votes, even though polling workers failed to sign off on the tabulation tapes. This, according to the Federalist. Now, those tapes are the ones that are printed out by the voting systems at the end of the day, each day of early voting. And the outlet writes that these tapes are critical to the certification process, but they weren't signed. And Fulton County, they note, admitted it in court, or at least in front of the Georgia State Election Board. So there you have it. The right-wing media sphere was on fire after Fulton County's admission here. The election officials in Atlanta, again, the most populous and most Democratic-leaning part of the state, admitted that they unlawfully certified 315,000 ballots in a race that Trump was certified to have lost by just 12,000 votes. So this story goes. The jig is up. Right-wing media headlines blared, quote, Trump was right about the 2020 election. Quote, President Trump is owed an apology. The 2020 election was stolen, and now even Democrats in Atlanta, Georgia admit it. During the hearing, Ann Brumbaugh, the attorney for the Fulton County Board of Registration and Elections, said that she, quote, did not dispute that the tapes were not signed, adding that since then, quote, new standard operation procedures have been put in place and poll workers had been trained to ensure it does not happen again. But the cat was out of the bag after clips of her comments circulated on right-wing social media outlets. Tesla CEO Elon Musk wrote, quote, massive voting fraud uncovered. Another right-wing commentator who calls himself Gunther Eagleman wrote, quote, these revelations prove we need total unredacted access now. Another right-wing internet personality wrote, quote, this isn't about Trump. It's about the fact that Republicans screamed fraud for years and were told to sit down. Well, the story would somewhat escape the right-wing media sphere late last year as Newsweek and some others just days before Christmas ran the story. So you may or may not have seen it. They ran some stories on all of this because, in truth, It does sound bad. 315,000 unlawful, unsigned, uncertified, fraudulent votes counted in the most Democratic part of the state in an election that Trump is said to have lost by just 12,000 votes statewide. Yeah, that sounds bad. But like the previous attempts to falsely pretend that Georgia's election was stolen in 2020, such as the now debunked and disowned so-called documentary film titled 2,000 Mules, shown to have been a hoax itself, is there perhaps more to this story? That the right-wing liars and schemers and dopes like Elon Musk and Donald Trump and his duped brain poison supporters are perhaps misrepresenting about it? Joining us now to discuss all of this and undoubtedly more is our old friend, a former Republican, by the way, and a years-long champion of election transparency, security, and oversight. Marilyn Marks is the executive director of the Nonpartisan Coalition for Good Governance, as well as the woman who sued and won against the state of Georgia to remove their old, insecure, unverifiable touchscreen voting systems made by Diebold, only to see Republican Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger replace them with new, insecure, unverifiable touchscreen voting systems made by Dominion, which she is also suing the state to get rid of. And she is the woman who initially revealed the Coffee County voting software breach in Georgia that began 5 years ago today. She revealed it after she had received and taped a phone call from one of the ringleaders of that scheme, who would eventually plead guilty to his part in it in Fani Willis's RICO conspiracy case against Trump and his co-conspirators. Well, that's a lot, but welcome back to the broadcast, Marilyn Marks.
Thank you so much, Brad. Happy New Year.
Thank you. And to you. We've got a lot to get to today. So on all of this, though I suspect we'll be speaking with you quite a bit this year, Marilyn. But let's start with this: these 315,000 fraudulent votes, as the Trumpers have been describing it in Fulton County, Georgia's 2020 election. Is there perhaps anything else that maybe we need to know about that story? Were 315,000 fraudulent votes really cast in the most Democratic part of the state in an election that Trump won by just 12,000 votes, as his dim-witted supporters are beginning to claim?
Of course not. This is the biggest bunch of nonsense you've ever heard. What it amounts to is that from early voting, and there was a lot of early voting in the 2020 election, and there were, you know, over 300,000 people who voted early. And the poll tapes from the scanners that were in the early voting sites, of course, you don't run the poll tape until election night, right? You don't want to have the results available until election night. So they run the poll tapes at the tabulating center. And at the bottom of the poll tape, there is a place to sign that this is just the original tape, that nobody substituted the tape. Mm-hmm. And the signatures, just the workers just never happened to put the signatures on those tapes. There is not one thing to suggest that there were fraudulent or that there was a lack of certification of the election. It's just that they failed to sign the fact that the tapes were original.
Now the local MAGA guy, I guess, who initially raised the questions about these unsigned tapes, he argued to the state elections board last month, quote, "These are not clerical errors. They are catastrophic breaks in chain of custody and certification." Hang on. He says, because no tape was ever legally certified, Fulton County had no lawful authority to certify its advanced voting results to the Secretary of State, yet it did. And Secretary Brad Raffensperger accepted and folded those uncertified numbers into Georgia's official total without questioning them. That is not partisan, he says. That is statutory. That is the law. When the law demands three signatures on tabulator tapes and the county fails to follow the rules, Those 315,000 votes are, by definition, uncertified, he argued.
No, so. They are not.
What?
They are definitely not uncertified. I mean, it means that somebody failed to put a signature to say that the tape was original. I think that this guy's argument, and it's foolish, is if you break any law at all, then the election is, you know, completely void. So if you don't have the poll watchers wear their name tags, which is a law, you got to have a name tag. Oh my, the election is fraudulent, illegal. And, I mean, it's an absurd argument.
And these the tapes that we're talking about here, these are not the results. These are not the actual ballots. These are basically tapes saying this is the number of ballots that were tabulated or were scanned by this particular scanner,
and,
right?
And it will give you the candidate totals mm-hmm. from that scanner. Mm-hmm. These are the same poll tapes that on election night for the election day scanners that were in the polling places. What's required is they run them there before everybody goes home, after the close of the polls, and they tape them on the door right. of the polling place so right. that everybody can see them. Mm-hmm. But of course, by the time that the early voting tapes are run, they are now down in a central tabulation center. They're no longer in the original polling place. And they didn't sign the tapes.
And none of this prevents the actual ballots from being right. counted. Right.
Exactly right. And in fact, the memory cards were then from those machines mm-hmm. were taken, which had images on them. Unfortunately, they did disappear. But they had the tallies on them. They were moved to the central server, uploaded and added to the totals for the election. And of course, there are the paper ballots that are available to support mm-hmm. the votes. And, you know, it is just, it's foolish, of course, but they found a way to get that hook to try to gain attention mm-hmm. and try to raise the issues of 2020 again. And it's annoying as all heck,
right.
because as you and I have talked about before, there really were some problems with 2020. There is yeah. nothing to suggest that Trump actually won Georgia. But we do know that there were tabulation problems and audit problems and recount problems. And every time we see these crazy claims, it takes away from the ability to look at the serious discrepancies and to address those so that those things cannot be used to undermine the 2026 election, which is what I'm worried about, Brad. I'm so worried about the contentious nature of 2026 in Georgia and the ability to keep using 2020 as a reason to point to and say we can't trust the 2026 elections. I fear that the Trump team is going to be able to undermine both the process, the confidence, and even present legal challenges because we in Georgia have not cleaned up our act from 2020 from the serious stuff because we waste our time dealing with silly things like claiming 315,000 votes where the poll tapes weren't signed were somehow fraudulent.
And of course, add to that, I mentioned during the intro that 2000 Mules documentary
yep.
that was totally bogus, right. that, you know, forwarded all sorts of disinformation. And it's difficult to even, you know, keep up with it, to debunk it. Let me ask you one last question on these tapes, and then we'll move on to some of those concerns you mentioned about 2026. But the tapes that were unsigned that apparently first of all, it's not a law, right, that these be signed. This is actually a state election rule versus a law that these be signed.
And I think there is a law.
Okay.
The rule goes into more detail.
I see.
And the rules do have the force of law. Yes, they were supposed to be signed.
Right.
But they were just supposed to be signed to say, yeah, this is the original tape.
And
that's all.
And they say you're supposed to sign it under On the tape, it says, "We, the undersigned election officials, hereby certify that the above election was held in accordance with the Local Authority Election Act and regulations of this jurisdiction." Now, is there such a thing as the Local Authority Election Act in Georgia or Fulton County?
Not there. That is just bogus boilerplate that Raffensperger had put on those tapes left over from Alberta, Canada. The Local Authorities Election Act is something that is specific to Alberta. But unfortunately, that's what's printed on all the tapes for the last 5 years, even now. And so when they do sign, when the poor poll workers do sign the tapes, they're signing, "We certify that this election was conducted in accordance with Alberta, Canada law," essentially, which of course is foolish.
But as people may not be able to connect, Dominion is actually a Canadian company. So it sounds like this is text that they had in their software
that somehow
continued on to the machines they used in the U.S.
Exactly. And so I've asked some of these people the MAGA people who are screaming about, "Oh my God, I'm signed poll tapes." I'm saying, "How much confidence would you have in this election if we did have signatures that said, okay, it was done in accordance with Alberta law?"
I mean,
does that really change things here? No, it doesn't.
For some reason, I have a feeling they would find something else to be concerned about. And again, all of these things...
And they are going to continue to throughout this year.
And, well, moving on, speaking of Coffee County and the theft of the statewide voting system software made by Dominion, that Canadian company, and the concerns about that as we move into 26. After the Fulton County DA, Fani Willis, was removed from her own conspiracy case against Trump for his various attempts to steal Georgia's 2020 election, the new DA, who was assigned to essentially take over the case, he dismissed it essentially entirely, not just against Trump, But who is now the sitting president, so it's very difficult to bring a case, at least for now. But also dismissed the case against all 18 of the co-conspirators, including, Rudy Giuliani, Sidney Powell, including about five or six of these folks who were charged specifically in relation to that Coffee County software breach and theft and distribution. What does that mean? The dismissal of that case as we head toward the 2026 midterms and the fact that they stole that software, which is still, as I understand it, out there in the wild and will again be used, I guess, this year in Georgia.
Yes.
And that these folks have seemingly now gotten away with that theft.
Absolutely. And it is just devastating and creates an escalating risk every day. I actually went to see Pete Skandalakis, the guy who proposed, who inherited this case. Mm-hmm. And before he moved to dismiss the case, I went to see him to make a pitch for why the Coffee County portions of these crimes should not be dropped. And that this was really, I wish we had never called it a Coffee County crime. Because at the time, we did not know. It was an Oval Office crime.
Mm.
If we had called it an Oval Office crime, do you think maybe people would have paid more attention? That is where the scheme was devised.
Mm.
In that December 18th, 2020 meeting that we all hear about, the unhinged meeting, right? They discussed going to Georgia and getting the software. Right there with Trump in the room and with his senior advisors. We now know that. We didn't know that. And because we call it Coffee County breach so much, people think of, well, they just messed around with this little red county's software and hardware.
Mm-hmm.
And you made the point a couple of times in your opening that, in fact, this is the statewide software.
Right.
So you steal it in Coffee. It's the same as stealing it in Fulton County or DeKalb County. It's stealing it in 159 counties. And as you pointed out, there are multiple states that also use this software.
Yep.
So this software is floating around. It has been thoroughly distributed to all sorts of people and people who may not have good motives in terms of what they can do with it in 2026.
What?
No one has attempted to mitigate, patch, or address what we need to do with that risk.
Now, one of the things we talked to you about in, well, in advance of the 2024 elections, I don't know if it was in 23 or 24, but after this, we had learned about this Coffee County breach, the Dominion Voting System Company actually put out patches, security patches. We don't know what exactly they would secure, but there were security patches. The federal government at the time under Joe Biden recommended that these patches be installed immediately, as I understand it.
Exactly.
Most states did. But Georgia and its Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, said, well, no, that's going to be a lot of work. We don't have time for that now, but we will do it after the 2024 elections and prior to the 2026 elections. Have those security patches been installed in
Georgia? Absolutely not. And they have now decided that, oh, it's too much trouble, too expensive, can't really do it.
Really?
And really. And it's not. And it's absurd. But, you know, Brad, there is a simple, quick, inexpensive solution where they could install those security patches in the scanners and use hand-marked paper ballots and save millions and millions of dollars and get away from the darn touch screens and have a secure election and one that is auditable. And they will not do it. Governor Kemp and Secretary Raffensperger, who, by the way, is running for governor.
Yes, he is.
Are determined. They are absolutely determined that they are keeping these unverifiable machines. And one keeps asking why. And in fact, the legislature in 2024 said, oh, and you got to get rid of the QR codes. And they said, okay. And then Raffensperger went to the legislature last year and said, by the way, don't fund us for that. Just costs too much money. So don't fund us for that. Now, the law hasn't gone away, but they have no way of doing it. So they are planning to use the QR codes, the stolen software that was already vulnerable. And it couldn't be a higher risk situation.
And on these unverifiable touchscreen voting systems. Yeah.
And so for the 2026 elections, which are certainly going to be contentious, a winner is not going to be able to prove that they won.
And a winner is not going to be able to prove that the loser lost. Let me make sure I'm understanding this correctly. So at the polling place, Brad Raffensperger, Secretary of State, who hopes to be the Republican candidate for governor this year, in 2026, he is mandating still that every single voter who cast a vote at the polling place must do so on a touchscreen computer that prints out a piece of paper that may or may not reflect exactly what the voter tried to cast on the touchscreen. The voter can't know because what they have chosen is hidden in this QR code that only the computer scanner can read. Human beings can't read it, right?
Correct.
And so the legislature, the Republican-dominated state legislature, said, okay, at least get rid of those QR codes so that when they're printed out by the computers, the human beings can try at least to verify that what is on the ballot is what they actually voted for. And now Brad Raffensperger has said, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to get rid of the QR codes. And by the way, that software that was stolen in Coffee County, the same software that is used statewide, we are not going to apply security patches to the software for these systems that have been in place now for at least 4 years. And at the end of the day, come this November, we are all supposed to have confidence that the results that are unverifiable by anyone actually reflect the intent of the voter. I have that right so far, right?
Unfortunately, you have it 100% right.
And you at the Coalition for Good Governance, Marilyn Marks, have filed a lawsuit to say, hey, let's not use at least the touchscreen portion of that. Let's let everyone fill out a hand-marked paper ballot, use the same scanners we have now, but use a hand-marked paper ballot, the type that you would use for that they currently use for vote by mail, and just let everybody do that at the precinct, right?
Right, and then have good audits.
Excellent. You've got a lawsuit on that. I'm sure the courts will agree.
Yes, here we are 5 years after the beginning of the use of that equipment. And no, they dismissed us after having a fabulous trial where the evidence was all on our side. The Secretary of State had nothing to argue on the merits. Their experts ended up agreeing with our experts that it was urgent that the system be patched, et cetera, we proved we needed to go to hand-marked paper ballots, and we got dismissed on standing. Nothing to do with the merits. So we're in front of the 11th Circuit to prove that we have standing, and we certainly do. But by the time that we assume we have confidence we will win, but by the time it gets remanded back down to the trial court, 2026 will be over. We will not get relief in time to do anything for 2026.
And that's all a federal, that's the federal case that you've been running for some years. Okay.
Correct. And so what we're doing instead, Brad, is, not instead, that of course we got to keep going on that.
Right.
But we have filed a recent complaint with the State Election Board, who has the power to order hand-marked paper ballots. Because there are so many laws that are being broken right now, so many state laws that are being broken by the use of the stolen software with the QR code, the ballot secrecy problems that we have with it. So many laws. We're saying, State Election Board, you've got enforcement authority. You order the use of the backup system, the hand-marked paper ballot system. And they have not answered us yet as to when they will have a hearing, but that's one track we are going down. And then the other track we're going down is trying to get the legislature to see that they really need to, at least for the short term, at least for 2026, use the backup system, the hand-marked paper ballot system, and then go deal with what you want to figure out about what kind of future long-term system you need later. But right now, you've got a law that is available to you. You've got equipment that's available. It will save you millions a year, and it will save from having contentious, unverifiable elections. But so far, Brad, I have to say, we are not making a dent of progress with the legislature. Hopefully, when they come into session next week, they'll wake up from their slumber. But so far, while everyone who looks at it and we talk to them say, this needs to be done, it needs to be done urgently, it would be simple for the legislature to do, you can't get anybody to sponsor it. And it seems, I'm guessing, that the governor has said you will not.
Well, over at the State Elections Board, where you're also trying to get an order from them, they're no great friends of Brad Raffensperger. Is that fair to say? Even though they're right-wingers, but they don't like Raffensperger, if I recall.
The three Republicans on the State Election Board, yes, they are Trump people. But they have been unwilling to budge. We do not understand why. Now, we're hopeful because there was just a new appointee since the holidays, actually, a new appointee that we have worked with a lot on bipartisan work. She is the first vice chair of the Georgia Georgia Republican Party. And she has helped us bring bipartisan proposals to the board, to the legislature. And I think that she is going to bring a more balanced and positive and forward moving approach. And so we're going to try it again.
And we will continue to follow this, of course. And I mentioned at the top the fact that John Ossoff's U.S. Senate election could end up being the decisive one, whether Democrats or Republicans are able to hang on to the majority in the U.S. Senate. That's all going to come back to these unverifiable breached systems in Georgia.
Yes.
And on top of that, since you mentioned that Brad Raffensperger, the Secretary of State, presumably he will now be overseeing his own election
for governor,
as he is running in an at least three-way race, I believe, in the Republican primary, because Donald Trump hates him because he wouldn't, steal the election for him. So he's running. There's another guy running who I guess his the lieutenant governor of Georgia under Brian Kemp, who was termed out, Burt Jones.
Burt Jones, and he's Trump's guy.
He's Trump's guy. And then there's a third guy, the attorney general of Georgia, who is running. I don't know who's guy. Is he Kemp's guy? I can't remember who's
kinda,
guy.
Kind of, sort of, yeah. Okay. I think so. Kind of, sort of, yes.
But that's, yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, and it's all going to be determined on these voting machines.
And probably what your listeners may not know that makes Georgia so different from Colorado or other states is that the Secretary of State programs every single ballot in every single machine in every single county. So you have got a central point of failure. And so he is not only programming the elections for his own ballots, he is counting his own votes. He is certifying his own election, and he is auditing his own election. And what could go wrong?
I'm sure it'll be fine. I have to get out. We will, I'm sure, be keeping our eyes on that one, Marilyn. Very quickly, when is the primary election in the great state of Georgia?
In mid-May.
Mid-May. All right. We will look forward to that. I suspect we'll be talking to you in the days before and maybe even after that.
And let's talk about Ossoff's race sometime. It'll be interesting.
That's a nice way to put it. Marilyn Marks is the executive director for the Coalition for Good Governance. You can find them and support them at coalitionforgoodgovernance.org. She has, as you know, been doing God's work for many years there now with your support. You can also find her on the social medias, especially Blue Sky, at Marilyn R. Marks 1. Thanks, Marilyn. We'll be talking soon.
Thank you. All right. Okay. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, I've got to get out. I'm running late for a change. What else is new? That giggle there is our producer, Desi Doyen. Thank you very much, Desiree. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program or want to share it with anyone you know, love, or hate, you can do so for free at bradblog.com. No paywall there. Thanks to those of you who hit a donate button when you stop by. Or go straight to bradblog.com/donate to help us stay on your public airwaves in this critical election year. Drop me email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. You'll find me on the social medias, especially Blue Sky, at The Brad Blog. We'll see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
Listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.